The following presentation is from North Pine Baptist Church. We trust that it will help you learn more about God and His message for the world. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.
Thank you, Bill. Right, okay. So I'm going to start by just telling you a little bit about myself, because not everyone here knows who I am, and most of you probably don't know very much about me. So just to set the background, I'm very wary of this, because later on I'm going to be talking about bragging about yourself and stuff, so I had to agonise over this. Okay, I grew up in a church family, going to a Methodist church, but not a Christian family. I went forward at the Billy Graham Crusade in Melbourne in 1969, and since then have attended all those churches you see up there, North Canberra, where I was baptised and met my amazing wife, Rosalie, and when we lived up here the first time in the 70s, Kings Langley in Sydney, and when we moved back to Queensland, Stafford Heights and North Pine, where I have been a home group leader, a worship leader for 20-odd years, and I used to hide up the back doing the computer until I was replaced by a younger model. Professionally, I've always been a computer programmer or software developer, which they seem to be called these days, an IT person or whatever. I started in my first job in 1969 with the Commonwealth Treasury. And I've worked for the University in Canberra, the University in Queensland, the ABC in Sydney, and a number of different departments of the Queensland Government on contract. Back in 1986, we started our own company, Shirley and I, called Revelation Computing. And I did software development in areas like distance education, primary school handwriting, and warning students, warning people as they go past schools that it might be time to drop the speed because it's school time. Since retiring a couple of years ago, I've joined an organisation called Brisbane Seniors Online, or BSOL, and I'm what's called a mentor, which means we go into people's homes and older people's homes and teach them about technology. Because there's an awful lot of people out there who are being forced to use technology and don't have much of an idea about it, and so we go and help them with that. I also do question and answer sessions for BSOL, and that involves going to a number of the Brisbane City Council libraries on the north side, talking for 5 minutes about the organisation, and then answering random questions from the audience for about 55 minutes, which can be quite scary. And social media. Now, I have to confess, I do have a Facebook account and I do have a Twitter handle, which is about to get some good serious use. But I'm not a huge social media person, but I'll spin it like this. Because I'm not a huge user, I can take a step back and give you an objective opinion about social media, which is what I'm hoping to do tonight. Okay, now I hope you're all watching Back in Time for Dinner, which is a show on the ABC on Tuesday nights at 8:30, repeated on Sundays, I think. Because this show shows you how life has changed since, you know, our parents and our grandparents were children. It starts in the 50s, second week was the 60s, last week was the 70s, and tomorrow night it'll be the 80s, and it goes through to the noughties. But the interesting thing about this show is the way technology is evolving through the time. Back in the first episode in the 50s, there were washing machine was a tub and a poking stick and a ringer, and there was no television, there was no microwave, there was no just about everything, none of that sort of stuff. And it's really interesting seeing the way it's evolved. And if you want to show your children or your grandchildren, or you want to see how your parents or your grandparents lived, it's a great show. Okay, enough of that, let's get on to social media.
It all used to be so simple. Posting something involved a stamp. Strangers from the other side of the world didn't comment on your videos. Cats didn't play keyboards. Buzz was what bees did. Your annoying aunt didn't want to add you as a friend. And epic fail made no sense whatsoever. But now the rules have changed. The explosion of social media means that now everyone talks to everyone about everything, all the time. And these conversations can be accessed again and again forever, constantly changing and shaping the way we interact with each other and with brands. For instance, in just one day, 300,000 new people join Twitter. 55 million tweets are written. 35 million people update their Facebook status. The average user spends nearly an hour on Facebook. 2 billion videos are watched on YouTube. 34,560 hours of video is uploaded. And that's not taking into account the millions of posts, chats and comments that appear every day on blogs, forums and sites around the world.
Okay, so what's social media? Social media means a lot of different things to different people, but on this slide I've tried to list some of the ones you may have heard of. The top three are all actually owned by Facebook, even though they're totally different platforms. And the rest include some things like Netflix and Spotify, which aren't technically social media, but they're still in that play in that space. So what characterises social media? Well, basically, they're all different, but in essence, you sort of join one of them and you follow people, or people follow you, or you befriend people. And then you start looking at what they've done for a while, and then you get brave and you post a picture or put a comment on or an observation about something, and the people that you've befriended or that you've liked or that you've tagged will get to see that that picture or that information that you've posted. And then they can decide whether they like it and want to pass it on to their friends or just keep it to themselves. And so basically, whatever you put up there, it goes to a wider audience, and we'll see how that works in a few minutes. Okay, technology is really changing everything. The CEO of Netflix last year said that the main opposition that they're chasing is not YouTube or Amazon Video or movie theatres or DVDs, it's sleep, okay? Netflix's main competition is sleep. So their idea is to get you staying up all night watching movies. So what we're going to talk about tonight, What we're going to talk about tonight are the good aspects of social media, and there are a lot of good aspects of social media, absolutely. There's not so much information out there about all the good aspects because most people know and understand them and sort of take them for granted. They just get out there and use it. There are antisocial aspects and there are really scary aspects, and we'll go into those. And then towards the end we'll get into what would Jesus do if he was living in a social media age? What would he advise us to do? And then, of course, at the end, we have our 15 minutes of questions and answers. I've got my two social media experts down here, and they're going to answer all the curly questions. Okay, more people own a mobile phone than a toothbrush. That's pretty staggering. The average person checks their phone 150 times a day. More people belong to Facebook than any country on earth. Fake news spread 6 times faster than real news. And the really scary thing is you can live totally online these days. You can don't have to have any face-to-face contact with people. You can go shopping, you can eat out, you can just do like everything you want online without having to really interact with people, and I think that's very sad. Okay, some headlines. There are a lot of headlines. I had a heap more, but I had trouble getting them big enough. So lots and lots of headlines. Particularly since something called Cambridge Analytica came along about 6 months ago, or came into notice 6 months ago, and people found what was actually going on with social media, how your information was being scraped off and used and whatever. So, good things about social media: it's quick and easy, and it's an easy way to connect with friends and loved ones. Most people would agree with that. Facebook is probably the best platform for that. For those looking to get to know people, Twitter allows you to, by following the right hashtags, you can find out about people in your area, what they're doing, you can find out about the things you're interested in, and get to know other people who have similar interests. The real dilemma with things like Facebook is the way in which we want to use it. This is something I heard on the radio a couple of months ago in the morning, and I've managed to extract it, and just listen to the different approaches with Craig and Rebecca as they discuss how they use Facebook.
This is ABC Radio Brisbane with Craig Zonka and Rebecca Livingston.
Do you have a Facebook account? Let's face it, most of us do, don't we? But could you live without it? I ask because Mark Zuckerberg, who is the head of Facebook, is standing in front of a US Senate hearing today talking about privacy concerns after this Cambridge Analytica scandal with the data of some 87 million users that has been scraped, used for other purposes. And it makes me go, well, why do we need Facebook? Could we just do without? I know I could. What about you, Beck?
My relationship with Facebook is complicated because Generally, I am not super concerned about privacy. I'm not one of those people who goes through life worried about giving my credit card details online. I'm a little bit in that vein of, well, if you got nothing to hide, you got nothing to be worried about, which I understand the kind of the broader consequences of a naive attitude like that. But Facebook is my way of staying in touch with so many friends who I don't see on a daily or weekly or monthly basis. And I'm talking about people who are from my hometown, relatives who live overseas, friends who are travelling at the moment. I want to be involved in their lives. I want to see my friend who went and saw the Northern Lights for her 40th birthday. I want to see her pictures.
But if you didn't have Facebook, wouldn't you just call them? Wouldn't you send them a text? Wouldn't you send them an email? Wouldn't you still stay in contact with these people?
No, not in the same way. Not to the same intimate level where I can see their kids growing up, where I know when they're having, you know, a really tough time, or they reach out for a little bit of support. And it can be a beautiful thing when a whole bunch of people in a community, not in an immediate community, but beyond your kind of day-to-day hustle and bustle, can be involved in people's lives, and particularly intergenerational contact. Grandparents these days staying across what their grandkids are doing, being involved in their lives, having a conversation with a teenager that otherwise would not happen. That is the upside of Facebook. Certainly there are downsides, and rightfully there are questions being asked about how much detailed personal information is being scraped. And isn't that just a word that kind of makes your skin crawl as well?
It is, and that's why I don't engage on Facebook. I get the point that you're making, but for me, I could easily do without it.
Okay, so that's two different points of view there. Oh, I forgot that one. Okay. Okay, with social media, we can contact anyone around the world at any time with just a few keystrokes. We can share what we're doing, photos, videos, and opinions, and a lot of people do that. Social media has made it possible for like-minded individuals to discuss and discover and do things like spread information that you know you want to pass on and get support. If you're building an IKEA cupboard and you get stuck because something didn't go right, then there's 10 people on YouTube that have got videos that tell you how to do it, and that's really handy. Most people these days don't go to the manual or ring the helpline, they go to YouTube first, and that's great. Teenagers, there was an interesting study published just this year asking teenagers why they were, what their relationship was with social media and why they were dumping Facebook. So I feel that social media can make people my age feel more lonely or alone. It creates a space where you can interact with people. Sorry, less lonely or alone. It creates a space where you can interact with people. This is good. My mum had to get a ride to the library to get what I have in my hands all the time. She reminds me of that a lot. People can say whatever they want with anonymity, and I think that has a negative impact. So teenagers have opinions as well. And we've all seen situations like this. I apologise that the picture only shows women, because we've seen plenty of men doing exactly the same thing, ignoring each other and being on their phones. Plenty of kids I've heard say, "Mummy's always on her phone. Daddy never puts his phone down." Okay. Tim Berners-Lee, who invented the major part of the internet called the World Wide Web, said that in recent years we've seen conspiracy theories trend on social media platforms. Fake Twitter and Facebook accounts stoke social tensions. External actors interfere in elections, and criminals steal troves of personal data. So that's an interesting comment. Now, a few dozen likes can give it, this is for companies that are trying to analyse you and find out how you tick. A few dozen likes can give a strong prediction of which party a user will vote for, reveal their gender and whether their partner is likely to be a man or a woman, provide powerful clues about whether their parents stayed together throughout their childhood, and predict their vulnerability to substance abuse. And that's without actually diving into all your personal information. It's just posting some information and having people like it or not like it. And at that time, Facebook was pretty lax with its security. Okay, so CBS News said this comment, and I want you to remember this because we're going to come back to it. The Facebook breach shows that we share too much and we think too little. Sorry, I hardly read that up there, but it's not too bad there. CBS News. So when you see things like this, if you love your daughter, or like this if you think your father is the best person in the world, or which Ewok are you, these are phishing comments. It sounds cute and fun, but these quizzes are used to get you to open up your account to steal your information, potentially. They could be planted by what are called data miners, who want to know about who you are, how you live, and the types of things you'll respond to. So be wary of these cute quizzes that look innocuous or things that you just pass on to other people. Some of the information you give up is often things like what's your pet's name, when do you... what do you like to do for a hobby, etc.? What's your favourite colour? And some of those types of questions can be secret questions for passwords or identity checks. Now, we all, I think, are aware that you don't put your real birthday on Facebook because that's so easy for people to get to. And your birth date is a very key part of your identity and who you are. So I think most people have got the hang of either not putting their birth date up at all, which is possible, or putting a fake one. However, the big drawback then is that people who do know your birthday, of course, on your birthday say, "Happy birthday, Chris. Happy 40th birthday, Chris." I'm sure you're not that old. And that immediately gives away how old you are and what your date of birth is. So you can control whether your date of birth is on Facebook, but you can't control what other people do. So this sort of information is difficult to control at the best of times. And Mark Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, said only a few months ago, if you've got personal information up there, it's already too late. People have got it. The people who want to have that information have already got it. And this is the head of Facebook saying that. Even if you lock everything down now, they got the information months or years ago.
With social media sites being used by one-third of the entire world, they've clearly had a major influence on society. But what about our bodies? Here are five crazy ways that social media and the internet are affecting your brain right now. Can't log off? Surprisingly, 5 to 10% of internet users are actually unable to control how much time they spend online. Though it's a psychological addiction as opposed to a substance addiction, brain scans of these people actually show a similar impairment of regions that those with drug dependence have. Specifically, there's a clear degradation of white matter in the regions that control emotional processing, attention, and decision making. Because social media provides immediate rewards with very little effort required, your brain begins to rewire itself, making you desire these stimulations, and you begin to crave more of this neurological excitement after each interaction. Sounds a little like a drug, right? We also see a shift when looking at multitasking. You might think that those who use social media or constantly switch between work and websites are better at multitasking, but studies have found that when comparing heavy media users to others, they perform much worse during task switching tests. Increased multitasking online reduces your brain's ability to filter out interferences and can even make it harder for your brain to commit information to memory. Like when your phone buzzes in the middle of productive work. Or wait, did it even buzz? Phantom vibration syndrome is a relatively new psychological phenomenon where you think you felt your phone go off, but it didn't. In one study, 89% of test subjects said they experienced this at least once every 2 weeks. It would seem that our brains now perceive an itch as an actual vibration from our phone. As crazy as it seems, technology has begun to rewire our nervous system, and our brains are being triggered in a way they never have before in history. Social media also triggers a release of dopamine, the feel-good chemical. Using MRI scans, scientists found that the reward centers in people's brains are much more active when they're talking about their own views as opposed to listening to others. Not so surprising, we all love talking about ourselves, right? But it turns out that while 30 to 40% of face-to-face conversations involve communicating our own experiences, around 80% of social media communication is self-involved. The same part of your brain related to orgasms, motivation, and love are stimulated by your social media use, and even more so when you know you have an audience. Our body is physiologically rewarding us for talking about ourselves online. But it's not all so self-involved. In fact, studies on relationships...
Think you get it? Shouldn't press the wrong button. Okay, now let me set the scene for this one. This was an experiment in the UK. A coffee shop put on Facebook, like our Facebook page, and we'll give you a free coffee and a pastry. Okay, and they were using this to see how much information they could get about the people just from that simple act of liking something in exchange for a free coffee. So just watch what happens.
What's the name?
Joelle.
What was the name?
Alex.
Thank there you go, Johnny.
If you like our Facebook page, we give you a free hot drink and a free pastry.
We have a new like for Damien.
Standing by.
Hi there, can I help?
Yeah, I just liked your Facebook page.
Okay, I'll search Facebook now.
I'm searching Google.
I have a phone number.
I've got his email address.
Okay, Carly, are you ready
for information on Damien?
Yep, I am.
Mother's maiden name is he banks with
Carly, this is the girl coming in now with the blue scarf.
What's her name?
Nicholas. His date of birth, 7th May. She lived at 38A. Just
a couple of seconds. Two children,
her age, four and a
previous
address.
She's got the
photo. Yeah, got it.
Damien,
age 26 and a fitness instructor. How did you know that? Brody, he goes to UCL. Martin, went to South Thames
College.
Assistant psychologist at Great Ormond Street.
How did you know?
Huh? Better?
You know, I'm a Christian as well.
Oh, yeah, we know everything about you, Martin. Yeah. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Anna, from Russia.
Okay. All right, this one you
Your
may have seen.
Your mother has been bashed with a baseball bat after a long-running Facebook feud erupted in real life. Rhiannon McGann and two friends were at a Waterford West park around 10 o'clock last night when they were confronted by a group armed with metal bats and golf clubs.
Okay, that's probably enough of that. Cyberbullying as well, big things that are faced, stoked by these things. Okay, now, really scary is that Facebook can change the way you think about things and the way you act to things. Few users expect that Facebook would change their news feed in order to manipulate their emotional state. For 1 week in January, a few years ago, data science skewed what almost 700,000 Facebook users saw when they logged in. And the people that people were either given very positive news stories or very negative news stories. And then the posts that they made after that reflected the style of information that they were given. The people who were given negative information tended to use very negative words in the things that they were doing. So it's very easy to manipulate people using this. Okay, so basically on these social media platforms, we see something and we have to respond to it in some way. Well, we don't have to respond to it, but most people do. So there's the famous like button. But like means different things to different people. Often it's just, I've seen that, like. It could also mean, I agree, but I haven't really looked at it, because in the details, often it's a headline, and if you delve into the headline, you find out that it's actually saying different things than what the headline says. Furthermore, usually when someone comments on something, lots of other people come in and comment as well. Three or four comments down, you can find people using obscene language, people being totally the opposite of what you thought you were liking, because they don't like it. And, of course, if you're friends with your children or something, you don't necessarily want to pass that on to them by liking it. People like things because they think other people need to see it, but never themselves. They also think, well, I liked Fred's post, and so I'll start a family war if I don't like his brother's post or his sister's post or whatever. Or, you know, you've liked every one of their posts, and if I don't like this one, they're going to wonder what's going on. And, of course, like can mean you really do like it, of course. I tried very hard searching on the internet to find a diagram that showed you the way in which information spreads on social media. We've all heard about things going viral. But what I wanted to show was the way in which a simple post of a picture or a piece of information can spread around the world. And so I made this diagram up myself. So it's pretty simplified, but I hope you'll excuse any errors in it. So we've got, let's go back for a second. We've got someone posting a picture of their student, their daughter entering grade two, I think it is. And then what happens is immediately their circle of friends see and like that. Now, over here, we have the likeometer. So at the moment, we're on the right-hand side. So at the moment, five people like that six people like that because that's the circle of friends and family that you know specifically on Facebook. Okay, then one of them likes it, the post, and so that brings in their friends. So you've got your own friends and family, and then you've got friends of friends. And then another person likes it, and they bring in their circle of acquaintances and so on it goes. And eventually one of the friends of friends sees it the next morning and decides to like it as well. And so that brings in another group of people who you probably don't know, who you probably aren't friends with, and some of them you mightn't even particularly like. And out there, there could be some person who really does the wrong thing with that picture. So you really do have to be careful when you're posting stuff. You've got to always have in your mind that people might see this information that I don't know, and I don't particularly want them to see that information. So just be wary. And it may not be something criminal or something dangerous, but it might simply be someone who's hurting because their marriage has just broken down and they don't want to see, you know, your happy snaps of your wonderful holiday or something like that. So you do have to just be a little bit careful. There are people out there in all sorts of mental states and whatever. So as it goes on, the information just gets further and further, and now our simple thing that we shared with half a dozen friends has got over 50 different people all seeing it potentially. Okay, I can't read that, but Facebook has been forced, basically, with the things that have happened to allow you, it hasn't really changed anything, but it's just allowed you to have much more control about who can see what and how far things do go. Initially, it was pretty open slather, so whatever you put and whatever you sent just went out there. But nowadays, there are a lot more settings, and you'll see emails from Facebook and Twitter and all the other different platforms telling you, we've updated our policy and now you've got much more transparency and blah, 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 trying to spin it as if they're doing you a favour. But really what's happening is they've been forced to get real about this stuff. The European Union's been very good at forcing these people using their weight of numbers to be more transparent about what they do. So back in the olden days, if you wanted to change who could like your post, you had to find this this little pencil thing over there that I've highlighted in red, and click on that, and then you could categorise whether it's sporting information or academic information or whatever, you could categorise who could see it. It was very obscure and very difficult to find. And so eventually you could say whether you wanted this to go to friends or friends of friends or just your close circle. Nowadays, it is a bit better than that, and there's a lot more granularity in what you can select. And but even then, yesterday when I did this and I looked in there, I found that a number of my settings, because I don't get on there that often, a number of my settings were still public by default from the days when I first signed up, probably 6 or 10 years ago. So you've still got to be careful. You need to go in there and look at all the settings, which are now easier to find, and make sure that they're the way that you want them to be. And you can select to make information public or friends only or only me or whatever. And this applies to things that come into you and things that go out from you as well. So there's a lot of different... And most people probably can't be bothered because there's so many different settings you do actually have to go through and look at. And good old Facebook, it changes every few weeks anyway. They keep deciding they've got to change the way things are done, and that all makes it more difficult for us. This was an email I got from Twitter a week or two ago telling me that basically they're being forced to make changes and you should appreciate this stuff. But basically it's saying you've got to have a look, and the onus is still on you. Okay, be careful what you share. This is a story that's been around for a number of years, but a family in America did a Christmas picture one year, and they put it up. I think this is probably even before Facebook. They put it up on a web page somewhere, just to share with their immediate family. This is what the family looks like now on Christmas, you know, 2004 or something. And nothing happened for a few months, and then they got a phone call from some friends of theirs who were travelling in Europe, and lo and behold, they came across this huge billboard in Czechoslovakia with their family, lovely family snapshot, advertising some product, which I can't even remember what it was. So that's how easy it is for this stuff that you put up innocently to get used for purposes that you did not intend it to be used for. Another example, which is very close to home for me, is this is about sharing information about your children. Your children are young and cute initially, and the great temptation is there to, you know, document their lives and put up all the cute photos, and every time they get an award or something happens or whatever in their life, you document it all. When they get to teenagers or older, things can change. You didn't really ask their permission to put this information up, and of course they're too young to even know what it means. But when your teenagers get Facebook accounts themselves, and of course you want to be friends with them so you can keep track of who they're mixing with and what they're doing, so immediately that happens, they and their friends probably get used to, in the past anyway, get to see all the information that you've posted since the first sort of baby shots as they came home from hospital. So this story obviously didn't involve Facebook because it happened 43 years ago or something, but my brother, who's a bit of an academic, and his wife, who's also a similar vein, decided that they'd do a research project on their firstborn daughter, Anna. And they decided that for the first 5 years of her life, they would document everything she read and how she responded to it and what she liked and what she didn't like and how much time she spent reading books and all the cute comments she made, etc. A bit similar to what you might put on Facebook these days. Okay, well, fast forward to my brother's 70th birthday 2 years ago. Neither of his daughters turned up for the birthday. He was very upset about it, but the basic reason was they haven't spoken to him for 20 years because they did not appreciate this invasion of privacy. That he, I mean, admittedly, this was a book. And this is, you know, before Facebook, we had real books. So he and his wife published this book, which, you know, I believe sold a reasonable number of copies. And Anna and her sister were very unhappy about it. So I could see the same thing happening with Facebook pictures and information. At least now you can delete old posts, which you couldn't in the past. In the past, when you posted something, it was there forever. Even if you died, it was still there in the property of Facebook. So you could go back and clean things up and whatever, but just be warned that cute little children turn into interesting teenagers, and they may not appreciate what initially was something very cute and interesting. And as far as I know, Anna is still not talking to her father. And he can't understand why, and I can't understand why he can't understand why, because it's pretty obvious to me. Okay. One of the things that happens with social media is we make it like a documentation of all the good things that happen. We have friends that go overseas and they post all these happy family snaps of everyone together really enjoying themselves and whatever, and they come back and you say, that was a great holiday. We saw your Facebook pictures. You obviously really enjoyed yourself. And she said, well, let me tell you what really happened, because Facebook version is not necessarily real life. And here's a little snap from a conversation I happened to watch on... you must think I spend my time watching television and listening to radio, but it's not always true. Here's a little conversation I caught on the afternoon news on Channel 9 a few weeks ago.
I know it's so different from when I first had a child, because now, with this prevalence of social media, I guess people tend to put their best lives on social media. I guess it's just got to be putting so much pressure out there on new mums.
That is so true, and I think, you know, it's helpful to try and remember that people use social media as a highlights reel. They're showing the best bits of their lives, not the tough stuff that they're going through. So as difficult as it is, we need to try not to compare ourselves with that. And if it is, you know, affecting you, then perhaps taking a break from social media could be really helpful too.
That sounds like some pretty good advice.
I love that comment, a highlights reel, because sometimes that's exactly what it is, and the hard stuff or the things that aren't so great don't often get there. Okay, there are a lot of people who actually don't use social media. Some of these people, I think they're in films or something. You might have heard of some of them, Sandra Bullock, Julia Roberts, Jennifer Aniston. Okay, so, I mean, there's probably good reasons why celebrities don't necessarily want to be on social media, but then a lot of celebrities live on social media, so... But these people have chosen not to be on social media. This is a lady in England who was a technologist, and but now she sort of locks away all the kids' phones and laptops at night and stuff to protect them. Should she be worried? She said that even though she was a technologist, some of her aspects of her relationship with technology were not so wonderful. I'd wake up and look at Twitter, she said. I have two small children, and the first thing I should have been doing was going to see the kids, but I'd be looking at Twitter. So she realised this was actually not a good thing, and now she's sort of gone the other way. Okay, seven deadly sins of posting. There's actually eight there, just to throw you off the track. So there are things that we can easily do when we're posting and things that people around us are doing and we often join in. So we can be boasting, we can be showing off, we can be selfish, we can be revengeful, we can be copying what other people do and trying to say, well, I do that too. And we can express anger, want validation or seek attention. But there are also really positive things about posting information. They can be loving or caring or supportive of someone. They can be helpful. Often when a child goes missing these days, someone puts it on Facebook and they're found within hours, whereas before it used to take a lot longer and the police didn't have much information to go on. That's really good. You can also be proud in a good way, and that's great in your posts. You can be empathetic with people. You can be evangelistic as a Christian, supportive, informative, or sometimes it's good not to post at all rather than posting something just for the sake of it. So let's get to the meat of the argument in the last 10 minutes we've got, which is what would Jesus do or what would Jesus say? And of course, I start off with Micah, who obviously isn't Jesus, but Jesus may have quoted Micah if asked the question about what sort of post should you do. And Micah 6:8, a well-known verse, says, "What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God?" And that's something I hope we try and practice every day, because it's not an attribute that our society wants us to be these days. And Luke 18, Jesus said, "But the one who humbles himself will be exalted." Matthew, "They love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at street corners, that they may be seen by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward." In Romans, Paul said, "For God's kingdom does not consist of food and drink, but of righteousness, peace, and joy produced by the Holy Spirit." Corinthians, "Take care that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak." Something that's fine for us can affect someone else. We have to bear that in mind. Other people are in all sorts of different mental states, all sorts of different emotional states. Just because it's right for us in our circle of friends, if you start posting things and thousands of people get it, some of them it may be what Paul would have called a stumbling block. And we must not just do things because everyone else is doing it on social media, because the world is using social media for all sorts of things and they have a totally different mindset. Even studying the temptations of Jesus, when he answered the three temptations by statements like, "Man shall not live by bread alone," and "Worship God and serve him only," which apparently are hedonism, egoism and materialism. I get the last one, not too big on the other ones. Okay, now, do you want to test as to whether you are worshipping God or not? This is the best one I've ever heard. Tambourine Convention, probably 15 or 20 years ago now, I heard John Chapman from Scripture Union in Sydney talking about worship, and he said, this is a test. "Whatever you're thinking about just before you go to sleep and when you first wake up, that is what you worship. Is it God?" I think that's a really great test, and I keep remembering that, and I keep trying to apply it to myself as well. Okay, "It is truly possible to live and love like Jesus on social media. It is possible to glorify God with our social media activity." This is a quote from someone, by the way, from a magazine called Responsible, I think it is. "Strive for connection, not attention. Be transparent, but not too transparent. Ask yourself, would I say the same thing in front of someone or in front of a group of people? Don't buy into say what needs to be said. Learn to listen better." It was a great thing to do. We're very good at jumping in and giving our version of things, but to listen, truly listen until the person's finished and work out what they're really telling you is really important. "Avoid stirring the pot with the articles you serve. No racist comments, and avoid being mean to bloggers." Okay, this is my last slide. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus said, "And who is my neighbour?" And in this day and age of social media, we probably need to say, "Who is my friend?" Or more technically, "Who is my Facebook friend?" If we come back to that CBS News quote, "We share too much, but we think too little." I think less is definitely more when sharing information, because you don't know when in the future or when right now someone is going to be affected, how they're going to be affected by that. Think too little. Don't post controversial stuff too hastily. Remember when people used to send emails and then the next morning they'd wish they could take them back, which you couldn't? Even when people used to ring people up and say something in haste, or you're in a meeting and someone snaps at you and you snap back and then you have to apologise the next day because it wasn't really what you thought you should have said when you had time to reflect on it. And so all social media does is just amplify that even more, so that the information can get out there. And not only does the person affected see it, but hundreds of other people see it as well. Okay, and the verse that was scrolling around the screen when you walked in probably was Philippians 2:3. Do nothing from selfish conceit, but in humility, there's that word again, count others more significant than yourselves. Okay, that's it for me. 2 minutes to go. That's pretty good. Okay, questions. Be gentle, please. Yes, Brian.
With Messenger,
yes. Yes. I imagine there is one of my experts going to, don't know. It's not encrypted, so that's a reason for being wary, because people can hack into things if they're not encrypted. I don't know if there are specific privacy settings for Messenger. I would imagine not, and Brad is shaking his head. I was going to call you Brian for some reason. Brad is shaking his head, so we think there are yeah. It's not safe. No. Thank you, darling. Good social media user here. I sit while Shirley's doing her Facebook and Twitter and say, oh, no, they didn't like that, did they? And fallen for that RV scam again. You know, it just goes round and round, and $150,000 RVs, we've got six of them. And just like this, and you know, you could win one. The fact that they're sitting there, they call RVs for a start, which we don't have in this country. They've got American number plates. Left-hand drive, exactly, yes. Shirley actually, with the Brisbane Seniors that we're both involved with, she actually does a seminar on scams, which goes for about 2 hours and could go for a lot longer, and helps people to recognise scams and know how to handle them. And we have lots of clips of various people, including well-known people who've fallen for things, and the consequences of having your phone number ported off to someone else in the middle of the night while you're asleep, or losing your bank account details and all that sort of, they're scary, yeah. I should have mentioned too that now, being forced to be more transparent, there's a button you can press in Facebook and it actually tells you everything that it knows about you and everything that other people can see about you and everything that you've said and posted. You just get this huge, great, long, a text file of information, which, if you're an active Facebook user, it would probably take you weeks and weeks to go through it all. But they now do make available like a log of everything that you've done on Facebook, and any time any of the third-party apps or people have sort of got in there and got access to your information. Anything else? Not that I know of, and you'd have to be pretty brave to do that, because who of us who are a little bit older would have ever predicted that this sort of thing would have happened? I remember when the iPod, the music player, first came out and allowed you to have thousands of songs, and we had all these little music players that played about an hour's worth of music, and cost $200, and this iPod came out and it was $1,000 and had 1,000 songs, and I thought, who'd buy that? How wrong was I? So predictions are, I mean, you can see where it's heading, but probably in 10 years' time, social media, you know, the Facebooks and the Twitters will probably be replaced by something else. But they'll still, you know, offer those functions plus more. We'll probably just think something and all our friends will see it. You know, it's just the march of technology. Artificial intelligence will probably post things for you that they know you're going to post that you haven't even thought of yet, but, you know, they know that you're going to post it sometime soon, so you might as well do it for you. I'm not really being funny. It is going to happen. Okay. Yes, Mrs. Krieger? Used to be her Facebook. Part of your identity. Yes, Roy. Yeah, that's what they're doing. You know, Facebook and co, they're all free. You don't pay anything for them. But someone's got to pay. Someone's got to pay. And because you're not paying, advertisers pay. They pay Facebook to be on there. And they pay Facebook to get the information about what you've searched for so they can send you ads for it. And I found out only recently that it's even worse than that, because if your friends that you have carefully identified as your friends go searching for a new car, then they'll say, well, if Roy's friend wants a new car, he might want one too. So they'll give you the same ads that they're giving the friend, just because they think that, you know, the two of you are like-minded. And it could be true, particularly holiday destinations and things. Well, you know, you're going to France, and therefore your friends might even be going with you, or certainly will want to go once you've come back and posted these wonderful pictures on Facebook. So that happens. Now, the real question, which you haven't asked yet, but I'm sure you're going to, is, does Facebook and your phone generally listen in on your conversations? Because it's very easy to convince yourself that stuff that you've just talked about with your wife in the privacy of your lounge room, suddenly start getting ads for it. Now, it's not just us who think that. We're not just totally paranoid. But a number of people have told us that. Now, technically, I don't know how they do it. The carrier, like the Optus or the Telstra or Vodafone, they've got more technical capability of doing that than Facebook has, because your phone should tell you if the microphone's been turned on or if the camera's been turned on or something. However, the more I talk about it with people, the more people say, in fact, I must sit down and do a test. We're going to sit down one day and discuss something we've never discussed before, some product that we think we might buy, and just see what turns up in the way of ads, because that's the only way, real way to prove it. But just be aware that quite a few people, and if you can start Googling it, a lot of people think that Facebook and co are just listening in on what you're talking about. You haven't Googled anything, you haven't posted anything as far as you know, and yet it still seems to be able to send you ads for, eerily send you ads for things that you were just discussing, that we might look at getting a new lounge suite, and suddenly you start getting lounge suite ads out of the blue. So I'm not saying, technically my computer head says it shouldn't really be possible with the technology as we have it today, but I've seen enough people saying that they, you know, people that we know and whose opinions we trust, saying that they've just discussed something and ads have turned up for it. So maybe they've done something else that they didn't know about, but, or maybe their friends have gone home and searched for it or something, I don't know. But somehow or other, it seems to happen more than coincidentally.
Oh, yeah.
Hey Siri.
Hey Siri.
Yep.
My phone.
Yeah. I mean, technically they're listening for a keyword or for a command, but the process of doing that, they're actually recording everything you say and sending it back to Google or Amazon or Apple or whoever happens to originate the device that you bought. they say they're not doing anything with it other than just looking for keywords and stuff like that. But, you know, Facebook used to tell us that they were totally safe and secure and no one could get our information, and now we know it's not true. So I hope I haven't scared you all off. I mean, look, social media is good. It's got some great features. You know, some people here use it heavily. None of these dreadful things have happened to them yet, and hopefully they won't. But use it. Be aware of who's seeing what information you've got out there. Be aware that there's privacy concerns and there's information about yourself that you would prefer, that you probably should prefer not to post or not to store in your Facebook account. But just if you're just aware of these things and then use it wisely, and as a Christian you can use it to help people spread information about your faith and things like that, then that's fine. I'm certainly not telling you to all walk out of this room and delete your Facebook accounts. You can't anyway. I tried once, and I wanted to delete my account. Oh, that'll take a couple of weeks, it said. And then it came on and said, Shirley will miss you. Do you really want to delete this? Fiona will miss you, you know. All these, you know, sort of whatever the word is. So guilty, trying to guilt you into staying on there because of your friend network. And eventually, after a couple of weeks, you can delete it. But every few months, you get an email saying, "Do you want to get back on Facebook?" Or so and so, you know, wants to be your friend on Facebook. You just need to reactivate your account. So it may have changed now with all this privacy stuff. But certainly, a couple of years ago, I didn't have any success deleting my account at all. You can sort of make it inactive, but that's about as far as you can go. And it's very easy to just reactivate it. You just click a button and log in, and it's all off again. And all the stuff that people tried to send you when you were inactive, it all comes back like a bad dream. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Do you know them? Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the way the friend thing works is all I have to find is one mutual friend. You know how we have 6 degrees of separation from just about everyone in the world? Well, all I have to find, they have to find, is someone that you know and they know. And then they'll, after pounding the person they know, they'll also send the information on to you. Facebook wants to get as many people as possible in its network because that's more money, more advertising dollars. So it's desperately trying to make everyone friends. You know, it'll never cease until everyone in the world is friends with everyone else in the world, basically. But just ignore them. You do get these requests from people that you don't know, or even people that you barely know, or something like that. And you can just ignore them. If you kind of think you know them, it gets a bit of a dilemma. As can I refuse the request? Because then it looks like, you know, you're being mean and antisocial and nasty. So I mean, when I first set up my Facebook account, Andrew Ellenson decided that Andrew Ellenson should be my friend, and I decided I wasn't going to be friends with anyone outside of the family circle. So I couldn't really say, no, I don't want to be your friend, Andrew, because, I had to talk to him every Sunday and stuff and run his slides up the back. So I just left it sit there and sat there and sat there and sat there. It's probably still there, but you don't have to activate it, and he's gone and it's still there. Yeah, that's right. Yes. Ah, yes. Yep. Yeah, so did you get that? If you've got someone who's a friend and then you suddenly, out of the blue, another friend request comes up for that same person, you tend to think, I must have somehow unfriended them or dropped them off or something. Of course they're my friend. But what happens is, certain companies get into your Facebook account, find your list of friends, because that's one of the settings that you can make. And I noticed on mine yesterday that who can see my friends was public, so anyone could see my friends. And so they can set up a fake account, look like one of my friends, come in and say, do you want to be friends with Janine Rickman? And I thought, I'm already friends with her, so yeah, I'll say yes. But it isn't the real Janine Rickman, it's someone else. And so then that person masquerading as Janine Rickman comes in and becomes my friend and gets all sorts of information that I don't want them to have. So be very wary of repeat requests for friends. Thanks, Shirley. Okay, is that about enough? All right, a little treat to end with. Some of you mightn't like it. If you like musical theatre and you often wonder what would happen if the internet went down, this is a musical version of... can you click on it, Peter? I thought I had that set up to play.
Guys, check out this video of a chameleon riding a tricycle.
Oh. Sick.
What the what? The internet is down.
Just use your phone.
Oh my god, no. The phones don't have internet either.
What are we gonna do?
Everything I do online.
Stop,
no need to worry, we'll be fine.
What are you insane? This isn't fine.
What to do?
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 The internet is down.
Where do I put my hands? How do I function now? Where do I look? What do I say? Please someone tell me how.
Without my internet, without my steady streams, how will I ever find the dankest of the dankest memes?
No more cat videos,
pirated TV shows,
and no more access to the greatest wealth of knowledge ever.
How will I tweet?
How will I bite? How will I live now that the internet is down?
How do I talk to friends who live across the earth?
How will I watch a live stream of an eagle giving birth?
How will I be inspired without my Insta feed?
How will I order random things I just don't really need?
No way to find things without using Google Maps to guide us.
How will I share?
How will I brag?
How will I live now that the internet is down?
Well, I suppose we could sit here and talk now.
Try and read a book.
Maybe go for a walk.
Maybe it's good, we'll be more in the moment. Not stuck in screens could be nice.
I don't know.
Somehow, we'll survive.
We will try, do or die.
We will find a way to leave it all behind.
I guess it's not so bad. Once we move past our fears, we humans have survived like this for many thousand years.
We'll talk in coffee shops
and go outside to play.
We'll live our lives instead of watching someone else's day.
We'll have to know about stuff,
but that can't be too tough.
And now I'll never be anonymously cyberbully.
Now we can talk.
Now we can be.
Now we can live. Now that the internet is down.
I feel way more aware. I've got that time to spare.
Now no more Netflix till it asks me, are you even there?
Life is more beautiful. Now we are free at last.
Free from the pixels that would bind us to our online past.
Now we can finally see.
We'll just get news from one or two big media companies.
No more Twitch streams.
No more dank memes.
Now no more vlogs. No talking dogs.
No Google Street View.
No more tweets.
No one's on
time. No waste of time.
Now the internet is...
Oh, it's back. Yeah. No notifications. Seriously?
Hello, and thank you for watching our video. Question of the day.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us for this presentation from North Pine Baptist Church. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.